gonna fall.
Businesses have a responsibility throughout their entire value chains to respect human rights. If you can apply pressure at the top of the supply chain strategically, then you can achieve change at the bottom.
You are listening to Radio Atticus,
your national program on the law in the name of social justice.
This is obviously a live issue, and we need to start to talk about how we might regulate it here so that we aren't outsourcing our problems.
People are curious. They look at you and they want to know your story.
Radio Atticus, more than the vibe.
Hello and welcome to Radio Atticus, your national program on the law and social justice, broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network. I'm your host, Anna Marie Reyes. In this edition, voices in protest from Australia during the anniversary of International Workers' Day, observed around the country. But first, an interview about how the developments in the US with the treatment of its workers and immigrants are predicted to be having a flow-on effect on Australia. Since having put the maverick businessman Donald Trump in government as president of the US, more workers, immigrants, women, and basically those living on society's margins are coming out around the world to speak out against being targeted as sectors of society. When tens of thousands of people marched all over America during May Day or International Workers' Day, the theme had been largely about how the current U.S. president is fanning the hatred against those marginalized, for example, people of Islamic background, workers and immigrants. Radio Atticus' Sophia Carvajal, interviewing freelance ABC journalist Lucia Osborne-Crawley, followed by the coverage of International Workers' Day March in Sydney during May 1 this year.
While thousands of US workers took to the streets on May Day to march for workers' rights, US President Trump made a statement about American values and Loyalty Day. But what is Loyalty Day? I spoke to Lucia Osborne-Crawley, freelance journalist on US politics for the ABC, to talk about why what happens in the US can influence the events unfolding in Australia.
So at the White House, President Trump has proclaimed May 1 to be Loyalty Day. Can you tell us about that? What does he mean by that?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to remember about this proclamation of Loyalty Day is that it's actually something that happens every single year and has since Eisenhower. And basically, it started as a kind of a way to counter the idea of May Day or International Workers' Day. And it started in an era where there was a lot of anxiety about communism. Eisenhower and Congress made a decision to mark Loyalty Day on the 1st of May as a way to kind of reinforce, I guess, a commitment to American values, reaffirming commitment to the Constitution, ideas of individual liberty, freedom, equality, that kind of thing. And since then, every president has done it and kind of put their own spin on it. So last year, President Obama, in his statement about Loyalty Day, very much focused on diversity and the fact that America's strength was in diversity.
Can you expand a little bit more about that and how it's different, so different to Trump?
Yeah. President Obama, particularly in his last year, made his statement very much focused on the idea of Americans kind of overcoming any differences in quote-unquote origin or creed and coming together over shared American values. So the context of this proclamation was obviously the kind of beginnings of the presidential campaign. Some of these divisions were already becoming quite clear. And I think the statement that he put out is quite kind of pointedly directed at encouraging unity rather than, you know, kind of this divisive political rhetoric. And whereas Trump's statement, on the other hand, is very different, not only in that it doesn't mention any of those kind of ideas, but also it focuses very much on fighting terrorism in the kind of opposite way to the way Obama did. I think that almost in a coded way kind of strengthens the idea of divisions in America based on religious background and things like that. So I think his focus on ISIS really made that quite clear, particularly in the context of his 100th day speech, which was full of quite damaging rhetoric about immigrants and about all of those kind of divisions.
Following on from your point about immigrants, there seem to be two types of workers for Trump, US citizens and immigrant workers. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. And I think he's made that quite clear with his kind of his executive orders and also his rhetoric on immigration and immigrant workers. And I think that's why this May Day in the US has been so heavily focused on immigration issues, because immigrants in the United States make up a very big portion of the working class. The biggest protests were focused in cities like Chicago, I believe, which has a kind of long history of May Day protests. But in all of the places that this occurred, the turnout was quite remarkable. So there was very, very big protests on May Day, and even strikes and things like that, which is not very common in American culture. They don't have a very strong culture of protest and collective action. A lot of immigrant workers took time off work to try and kind of draw attention to the contribution they make to the workforce.
The May Day rally is going to happen in Sydney tomorrow. What do you think the similarities will be between the US and Australian rallies?
That's a great question. I think that we might see a kind of unusually large turnout to our May Day rally here in Australia as well. And I think that the reason for that is very similar in some ways to the US, because as we've seen in the last few weeks, the Turnbull government has clearly made a decision to make a crackdown on immigration its focus. So there's been the overhaul of the 457 visas, all of this talk about Australian values in terms of Australian workers and putting Australian workers first. And I think that that does echo Trump's rhetoric in quite a concerning way. So I think we'll see kind of a focus on that. We've also seen the penalty rate cuts in the last couple of months. And I think that that has really galvanised a lot of people in Australia to kind of get out and protest.
Why are US policies so influential on Australian policies?
Firstly, I think that US policies kind of have a soft power influence on a lot of countries around the world just because they are so powerful and so prominent. And I also think that we're experiencing some of the same kind of political issues where the kind of mainstream centre-right policies, or centre-left policies for that matter, have not been working in the last few years. And I think Malcolm Turnbull is feeling that quite keenly, as did the Democrats in the US. And the solution seems to be this kind of right-wing populism, which Australia is seeing as, you know, successful in some ways in Trump, in that, you know, he got elected and he still has at least some degree of support. So it seems like, especially with the immigration and all of this rhetoric around Australian values, it seems like there is, you know, at least some degree of Australia taking cues from America in terms of how to win back support in a very complicated political environment.
That was Lucia Osborne Crowley, freelance journalist on US politics for the ABC, who was talking about US politics and the wide-reaching influence that they have on Australia.
I'm Michael Kirby, and you are listening to Radio Atticus. Radio Atticus is part of the Community Radio Network. I was formerly a Justice of the High Court of Australia with no time to listen to this, but now I sit glued to Radio Atticus.
A lot of people who've been injured in accidents don't get legal advice about compensation because they're afraid of what it will cost. But the truth is, it doesn't need to cost you anything. A specialist injury lawyer could actually fund your case for you. Law Partners is Australia's largest specialist personal injury firm, and it costs nothing to call their local office to get some advice. Call Law Partners on 133 529. Or visit lawpartners.com.au.
2SER sponsors.
UTS is number one again. Ranked as Australia's number one young university for the third year in a row. As a truly modern university, we never look back. By continually challenging conventions, we not only change the status quo, we improve it. Join us for a course info evening. For options, dates and other details, go online and search for UTS Course Info Night. UTS, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Roving reporters Peter Lewin and Sophia Carvajal made sure to hear what were the messages of those who protested at Australia's Workers' Day in Sydney.
The workers united will never be defeated. The workers united.
Comedian and lawyer Corinne Grant, ACTU Secretary Sally McManus, and Dr. John Falzon, CEO of St. Vincent de Paul Society National Council of Australia.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to kick off the speeches, and the first person up is a cracker. She came out all guns blazing and reinvigorated the union movement like no one has before her. Please welcome to the stage ACTU Secretary Sally McManus!
Well, hello, Sydney. The rules, comrades, that made Australia fair are broken. They're well and truly broken. Inequality is now at a 70-year high. Casualisation is now rampant throughout all of our workplaces. 40% of workers are now casual workers. Since the global economic crisis, we have seen wealth go to the top and not come back to us. Think about this. Two of the richest Australians, Gina and Harry, they have more wealth than 40% of us. It's not right, comrades. And surely the answer to this is that working people need better and stronger rights. We need to swing the pendulum back, and we, the Australian trade union movement, will be the people who do it. Tax dodging has now become a business model for so many employers, a business model. Chevron paid not one single cent of tax last financial year, not one single cent, or the year before that. And Chevron's not just some example of one bad company. They line up with 679 companies, Australian profitable companies, that paid not one single cent of tax, not one. And that's our money. That's money for our schools, our hospitals, our pensions. And 48 millionaires in Australia, 48 of them paid not one single cent of tax, not even the Medicare levy. You know what? On average, each of those millionaires paid $1 million just to minimise their tax, to hire lawyers and to hire accountants to do so. And that $1 million is also tax deductible. There will be no limits on their greed. They will not put limits on it unless we do so, unless it's us that does so. And just like our tax laws are broken, so are our rights at work. Employers go about thumbing their noses at our laws, and Malcolm Turnbull goes about weakening them. Casualisation. It used to be the case. It used to be the case that after some casual jobs, you had a very good chance of getting a good, steady job for the rest of your life. That's no longer the case. And it's not right that young people right across our country don't know what it's like to have a paid sick day or a paid holiday. That's just not right. And wage theft is endemic across our economy as well. Domino's, 7-Eleven, all of them, they're just ignoring our laws. Minimum wage is now only 42% of the average wage. It used to be 53%. It's lost touch. It's lost touch with where it should be. Our safety net doesn't move. It only goes backwards. And we've seen that with a disgusting decision on penalty rates where 700,000 people face losing wages and conditions on the 1st of July if we let them get away with it. We can never accept that. We can never accept that as a trade union movement. And our right to strike, it should not be right that those Fairfax workers face fines of over $10,000 for standing up for our democracy and for standing up for their jobs. Our strike laws are out of touch with international standards, and they have been for a long time, and that's part of the reason why the very rich have too much power. And what is Malcolm Turnbull doing about this? Well, like a religious fanatic, he's following neoliberalism. He's following it right to the bitter end. He's still wanting to give $50 billion of our money to corporations. He wants to hand that over to them. Whilst he's chasing our pensioners, people with disabilities and the unemployed for debts they don't even owe through the Centrelink debt debacle. And he's attacking unions. That's what he does every day. When he worries about something, just smash the glass and start attacking unions. And he's been attacking me. Within 24 hours of becoming secretary, Michaela Cash said I should resign. They want me to apologise for us. Well, I've got something to say. I will never apologise for us. I'm proud of who we are. We are the history makers. It's the trade union movement that's built our living standards, that built Medicare, built the minimum wage, built the eight-hour day that we're celebrating. It's us that built those living standards that made Australia fair. It was the trade union movement that did that. And our parents and our great-grandparents fought for that. And there's no way we're going to let them get away with trying to take it off us. In fact, it's going to be us that's going to fight to change the rules, to make Australia fair again, to give workers more rights, and to make the rich pay their fair share of tax. Yeah. And how are we going to do this? First, we need to win the public arguments, and the public are already on side. You can talk to your friends, your neighbours. If you're on social media, you can tell that story there too. Tell them about inequality. Tell them about these are just rules that people have written, and we can change those rules, and we're going to. We need to grow our movement. We need to ask people to join our movement. We need to inspire a whole generation of young people to be part of the history makers, to be part of the change that we're going to bring about. And comrades, we need to be ready to mobilise. We need to be ready to fight. And I've got a question for you, Sydney. Are you with me?
Yes!
Do I hear you? Are you with me?
Yes!
Because we're the mighty trade union movement of Australia and we never give up. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd now like to bring on our next speaker, Dr. John Falzon from Vinnie's National Council. He is an activist and a poet, and his second book, Communists Like Us, was published on the 1st of May. And he is also a proud member of the ASU. Come on down, comrade. Dr. John Falzon.
I too would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of this beautiful land on which we gather. I'd like to pay tribute to their spirit of collective dreaming, collective resistance, and collective hope. And I'd like to all of us to remember that this land on which we're celebrating May Day always was and always will be Aboriginal land. It's beautiful to be here with you who dream of a better society. Happy May Day, Sydney. It's particularly beautiful to see the children involved. At a time, sadly, when this government has made an art form out of cruelty to young people, with rising university fees and cuts to penalty rates and nothing being done about the unemployment situation for young people. It's important that the young people, that the children be here today, because they are truly our future. The future of the nation, but the future of our movement, our mighty movement. And let me say that my partner Jackie and I have only ourselves to blame regarding our own children because we exposed them to so many marches. The family that marches together changes the world together. But we have only ourselves to blame because I remember on many an occasion when trying to get them to go to bed at night, they would caucus in the corner of the lounge room and then spring to their little feet and start marching around the dining room table chanting, "The children united will never be defeated." Very dangerous, very dangerous. Friends, in the words of the Sandinistas, solidarity is the tenderness of the people. We, the members of unions, are the builders of and the fighters for a new society, under the guiding stars of struggle and hope. A society built on the simple principle of from each according to their ability and to each according to their need. Unlike the society of today, which glories in inequality, which makes a virtue of injustice. Today, friends, inequality is not just caused by government policy. Inequality is government policy. Yeah. And this is nowhere more evident in the rise of homelessness. Let me tell you, make no mistake, when you see somebody who's experiencing homelessness, it might be a long journey out of homelessness, but it is a short distance from being low paid, casually employed, to being homeless. And when you see someone who is homeless, don't think to yourself, this is proof that the system is not working. No, this is proof that the system is working. Because today, the system we have is based on the twisted principle of, to those who have much, more will be given. And from those who have nothing, even the little they have will be taken away. To the wealthy, tax cuts and corporate handouts. To everyone else, cuts to penalty rates, cuts to incomes, cuts to social security, cuts to social spending, to housing, to health, to education. This society must be consigned to the past. For today, with all our anger and all our hope, we struggle for the society of tomorrow. We struggle for the defeat of our enemy, inequality. For inequality writ large on this nation's landscape and legislature, inequality is injustice. And those who break this nation's heart, those who break this nation's heart are not those who disobey unjust laws, but those who make unjust laws. Let us unite in our struggle against inequality. Touch one, touch all. We are only weakened when we are insular and divided. But when we are united and diverse, when our class unity does not permit the exclusion of those who are pushed to the margins of the labour market or the margins of society, we are undefeatable. The struggle to build a just society is long, but it is beautiful. Together, we take heart in each other. And no matter how long it takes, we will win. We will win.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you for a very inspiring speech. And he's right. If we keep fighting, we will win.
Asian Women at Work is a community organization for migrant women workers who are working in low-paid and precarious employment. A lot of migrants come to Australia, and when they come here, most of the time they end up in precarious and low-paid employment because of the lack of English and the lack of support that they get from the Australian government. And so these are the women that we work with, and a lot of them work in factories, in retail shops, in butcher shops, in vegetable farms, in nail and beauty industry. And what we do is we help them with work issues, like, but it's not just about helping them, but it's about empowering them, giving them the opportunity to gain back their confidence and to be able to advocate for themselves and what they need as people who belong to Australia as migrants, yeah. Because a lot of them are really in the low-paid industry, but our members who work especially in childcare industry, you can really notice the gender pay gap there. And it's a big campaign at the moment here in Australia, and we really support that. I mean, it's very important that we address this gender gap between the women and workers and the male workers in Australia, because there are many industries that are female dominated, especially, and it's not fair at all that, you know, the women do not get the same pay as men.
The women in your organization affected by the...
Some of them are affected by the penalty rates, but again, it's an issue that is very important, you know, to be recognized and to be campaigned, you know, that the penalty rate should be there.
Andrew, what brings you here today?
I'm the Assistant Secretary Treasurer of the Health Services Union. Workers have to get together to make the point they are not a pushover, that their penalty rates need to be protected. The safety of workers at work needs to be upheld, and workers' rights generally need to be asserted. The workforce is under attack all the time. Companies are taking something away from workers at whatever opportunity they can. And we've only got to witness things like the 7-Eleven scandal and Pizza Hut and a few others, where even their ordinary basic pay is being stolen from them on a regular basis, that has now become almost a standard business model for some operators. And it's a disgrace. And they need to know that that's intolerable. Workers will not be pushed around. Price to pay for them, to them, by them, if they were to try it.
Are you affected directly by any of the wage structure?
Even in the health sector, even in the aged care sector, we've seen rip-offs occur. Just recently, there's a company that supplies contracted cleaning services in aged care facilities, and we discovered that many of their workers were being severely underpaid and money held back from them. And we've just sorted out that issue for a number of them that we know of at this stage. In one case, one worker will get up to $50,000 of back pay. $50,000, that would be more than a year's salary for that particular worker. And that's just what they kept back, even in an industry like the aged care sector.
Is it very hard? The worker that was involved in this example, is it because they weren't aware of their rights?
Companies sometimes take advantage of that. That worker and a bunch of other workers knew that something was wrong. They did something about it. They joined the union. They asked the union to look into it. We did, and we discovered more and more of this rip-off. Forced the company to back away from its business model and back away from its procedures and instead give back the money that they held back.
Is it hard to negotiate with large corporations?
The law is more on their side. Sometimes it is hard to straighten out these things, but unions can do it, and unions do it all the time. Sometimes some of those cases get publicity and sometimes they don't. We're talking about ordinary people. Ordinary people who go to work and want to return home safely, who go to work to earn a wage so that they can pay the bills and that they can spend money in the economy for themselves, but that also helps the economy.
Peter Lewin and Sophia Carvajal there reporting on the latest on issues of workers in Australia. These issues include the gender pay gap, penalty cuts, job losses, immigrant worker conditions, and widespread underpayment in various sectors. You're listening to Radio Atticus, broadcast nationally through the Community Radio Network and produced in the studios of Radio 2SER. I'm Anna-Marie Reyes.
Sydney Film Festival is now on sale. There's over 350 screenings of 288 films from 62 countries over 12 days in 10 venues. From the magnificent State Theatre in the city to the Ritz Cinema in Randwick, there's bound to be a film and a venue just right for you. It all happens from June 7 to 18. You can buy your flexi passes or single tickets right now at sff.org.au. Sydney Film Festival, proudly sponsoring 2SER 107.3.
Venture to Walsh Bay after dark during this year's Sydney Writers' Festival. Catch Teen Vogue editor Elaine Welteroth, Chris Krauss, poets Hera Lindsay Bird and Rupi Kaur, and My Dad Wrote a Porno's Jamie Morton. Or join Chris Taylor in the Hemingway Bar for intimate wine-fueled chats with some of the festival's most intriguing guests. 25th to 27th of May at Walsh Bay. Info at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers' Festival, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
And that's about all for this week's broadcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want more, why not check out our podcasts online on www.2ser.com/radioatticus. A shout out to all our listeners around the country, from as far as the Northern Territory to Port Augusta down to Tasmania and back to Sydney. Radio Addicts exists because of you. I'm Anne-Marie Reyes saying bye for now.